The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 01111911.
.606 on the Central Coast on this Wednesday, October 5th, 2022. I'm Dave Congleton, welcoming you to our final hour of Hometown Radio for the day. I just want to remind you that if you have missed any of these segments, Craig will have the podcast up shortly at 920kvec.com. If you've missed recent shows, they're all there waiting for you. So many ways to stay connected and hear this broadcast. This hour, we're going to go head to Florida and talk to Dr. James Bray, longtime resident of Florida. And no, he wasn't in the hurricane zone, but he has been following the situation there. And I thought that it would be timely and relevant to hear from someone who's actually in Florida about what's going to happen next. I'm looking at the headline of the Washington Post. Hurricane Ian is likely Florida's deadliest hurricane since 1935. Most victims drowned. You know that President Biden went to Florida today, and he met with Governor DeSantis. The third headline in the Washington Post is that Hurricane Ian is gone, but problems for Florida's waterways are just beginning. With that in mind, we head to the Sunshine State, and Dr. James Bray is waiting to join us. Jim, good evening, sir.
Good evening, David. Glad to be with y'all.
Let's remind folks how long you have been in Florida.
I started out in Tallahassee in 1986, and then I spent 10 years in Orlando, and I've been in Miami for the last 7 years.
So basically, you went to Florida the same year I came to California. And in California, yep. People say, they say, well, geez, how do you ever get used to the earthquakes out here? And I guess in Florida, it's how do you ever get used to hurricanes?
Exactly. And the answer is you don't. You don't get used to them.
All right, so when did you, meaning the collective you, first become aware that something called Ian was heading your way, and how concerned were you?
It was about 2 weeks ago that it was in the lower Caribbean mid-Atlantic, and the forecasts, the spaghetti models, they call them, seemed to indicate that it was going to pass south of Cuba and then head north for the Keys or Miami. That was the earlier projections. And at that point, I was concerned, and having, you know, been through several hurricanes before, and not a normal Florida resident, but a historical Florida resident. I knew it was coming, so got canned goods, found my manual can opener, got water, got gasoline for the generator, and then just sat back. And it was about 8 days passed, and then the storm, Ian, veered west. And the projected cone kept moving away from Miami and heading towards Tampa. And it's at that point where the Tampa residents became quite concerned. We got here in Miami, we had some hour-long storms with 3 inches of rain from the outer bands of the hurricane, but no winds and certainly no coastal flooding. That's the more devastating part about the hurricanes nowadays. So much of Florida is very low and, you know, 10, 15 feet above sea level that the coastal flooding with high tides is absolutely devastating. And that's what happened with Ian.
Ashore. But I think there's a two-step process there, Jim. One, you know the hurricane is coming, but you don't know exactly where it is going to hit. And so it sounds like you're in that guessing game here. Well, it could come towards us in Miami, or it could go around and go up through Tampa. You don't know for a while.
Yep. Oh, no. to be very honest, you don't know where it's going to come ashore until it comes ashore. I mean, that's just gospel. And there's the eye of the hurricane that has the 140, 50, 60 mile per hour winds. That eye is 10 to 20 miles wide, and that's absolutely devastating. But there's another 100 miles either side of the eye, which is not as devastating because the wind and the rain is not as intense. But you don't know where that eye is going to come ashore and actually do the most damage until it comes ashore.
Right. And so meanwhile, what does Tallahassee typically do, whether it's a Republican or Democratic governor? Are they issuing warnings? Are they telling you to evacuate? What is the role of government?
It's more countywide than it is statewide.
Okay.
I mean, there certainly is a state relief agency and a hurricane agency, but nowadays in Florida, it's the county agencies who are monitoring the National Oceanographic Atmospheric Association, and they're getting those weather reports, and they're the ones who are issuing the warnings. And it's the countywide warnings that you have to pay very, very close attention to. And some counties are very good, and some counties are not very good.
Hmm. All right, so you've got friends up there. What's happening? Are you calling them to warn them to get out? Are you calling them because you're concerned?
Well, in the beginning, they were calling me because it was headed for us, and I returned the phone calls and said, get to high ground and get out, get inland. The big fear years ago was to get out of Florida, and everyone would head to Georgia. But nowadays, if you can get 50 miles inland, then you're going to be okay from all the flooding and the storm surges. So you just talk to folks and you tell them to get out and to get safe and to get in high ground. And a lot of folks don't want to leave their homes, and that's one of the more severe problems is they have what's called mandatory evacuations, which are not mandatory. A mandatory evacuation in Florida simply means that once they're issued, if you call 911, 911 is unable to respond because of the weather conditions.
Yeah, you're on your own.
Yeah, exactly. And the real problem, before the hurricane, the real problem is population growth. Lee County got hit, which is the city of Naples, Sanibel, south of Tampa. Lee County has seen a 10% increase in population in the last 5 years. And these folks are from all over the country and have no idea what a severe hurricane amounts to. So they don't necessarily take common sense precautions because they're unfamiliar with it. Old-timers like me, we know better. But some of the young new citizens in Florida, those are the ones who really just don't do the preparation necessary, and they certainly don't do the evacuation, and that's worrisome.
Yeah. All right. Let me pause here. We got Dr. James Bray kind enough to join us from Florida to give us an inside report about what's been happening there the last week or two. Given Hurricane Ian, we'll pick up the conversation straight ahead. You're listening to The Dave Congleton Show. Worst hurricane to hit Florida since 1935. More than 100 confirmed deaths already. And it is a challenge that is going to take years for Florida to recover. I state all the obvious as we are joined once again by Dr. James Bray, a Florida resident since 1986, has survived many a hurricane, and I suspect much more in his future. And I know that you haven't been up there, Jim, as we're back with you. We've all been watching the video and the TV and seeing the photos in the newspaper, but it's just stunning to see before and after photos. What was there before Ian and what little seems to be left?
Yeah, very true. Very true. There are bridges that are washed out. There are I was going to say homes. There are entire neighborhoods that are leveled and non-existent. It utter shambles. The sewage water treatment facilities in numerous Central Florida towns have been destroyed. There's no drinking water. There's roads are still impassable in Central Florida because of downed trees and debris. The cleanup will be a very, very long time.
Because basically this came through Tampa, hit Orlando in the center, of course, home of Disney World, and then, boom, out into the Atlantic. I mean, it just ripped across Florida.
Yeah, exactly. Very similar to the 2004 Storm Charley, except that this one was much more intense and much more rain.
What do you hear from your friends up there that you've spoken with?
I got one very good friend of mine who I work with Habitat for Humanity. He's a vice president of Orlando Utilities. And I called him and talked to him for 5 minutes because he did not have time for me. But he's safe, his family is safe, and he's exhausted. And this was Saturday. They have, as of the storm hit Wednesday, and as of Saturday, they still had 150,000 people without power. But we're fortunate in that a lot of electrical companies from the entire South, well, not the Southeast, but the entire country, they will come and they will pre-stage. They'll bring their trucks and their equipment and their manpower, and they will stay in the safe part of Florida. And once the storm passes, they just move in. Convoys of trucks. And Stu was telling me that there are a lot of trucks and they're working fast in 24-hour days. There's just so much that needs to be done to get the power back up and the water working and the streets cleared.
As we mentioned earlier, the governor is taking some criticism in some quarters for not ordering a mandatory evacuation earlier. I'm just wondering, could he have done anything? Because as we both know, there are some people who are just going to ride it out. They would have ignored the evacuation.
Yeah, but there are two factors. It could very well be that the warning should have been earlier, but the folks who are going to pay attention would have already evacuated. The folks who aren't going to pay attention will not move. And I'm beginning, as I get older, I'm beginning to understand that. But more importantly, Ian shifted. About 24 hours before he came to shore, Ian moved west about 40 miles, which changed the eyefall from where it was going to come ashore to a little bit north and a little bit west. And it's the folks who were in that county, which is just north Lee County, I think Collier County, were very upset that they did not get the warning that it was going to come ashore right on top of them. But there's no, at this point in time, the science just doesn't allow you to predict exactly where it comes ashore. I mean, these folks had 2 or 3 days advance warning to, you know, get out of Dodge, but that proverbial 12-hour warning, it is going to hit your community, that was lacking. I don't think it was because of a politician's incompetence. I think it was the science of meteorology. They did not know Ian was going to shift.
Yeah. I told you, I have a friend who lives in Port Charlotte, and I guess that was pretty heavily hit. She took your advice and others and went inland, and then when she came back, she was one of the lucky ones. Her condo's intact.
Oh, that's luck beyond luck and fortune beyond measure. That's wonderful. There are so many homes. Andrew that hit in Miami, 30 years ago. That was billions, $30-40 billion in damage. And Ian will be second on the list, probably. Last I heard, it was $14 billion in damage was the estimates between houses and roads and infrastructure.
Now, I don't want to get political, but I want you to comment on the story. Is this getting pressed down there? I read that the governor of Florida appointed, what did he appoint his wife to?
It's a Hurricane Ian Relief Fund. call this number, go online, send $10, whatever you can, and it will go towards hurricane relief. And the fund is managed by his wife. And he has taken a lot of heat from it because, he only needs to do is say, call the Red Cross, donate to the Red Cross. You don't need an extra level of bureaucracy, especially since the Red Cross is trained to take the money in and to allocate the money out. And the fact that his family and his wife is managing this relief fund has a lot of folks in Florida up in arms.
Hmm. Well, Bill Clinton put Hillary in charge of health care.
Very true. Very true.
Why didn't DeSantis just use the Red Cross? I mean, I think you have a valid point there.
I don't know. And I could get highly political and say that it smells like something a Trump charity would do, but I'm not going to say that.
No. Instead, sketch out the challenge that Florida now faces, Jim.
Oh, boy. You see, that's in my humble opinion, that's why Ian is different, is what is ahead of us. The first problem is rebuilding the communities on the Gulf Coast. And there are good arguments on why these communities should not be rebuilt, because it will always be a hurricane zone. So why rebuild when you know that it is coming inevitably? It's the same issue in New Orleans. The problem is that it's very valuable, very beautiful real estate to build homes.
Yeah.
But I don't think Florida will ever abandon coastal property. The other thing is building codes. Florida revamped its building codes after Andrew and made home construction stronger. Now, if you're going to live on the coast, what is necessary is what Louisiana has, which is homes on stilts that have to be 10, 12 feet above the flood zone and storm surges. Those kinds of building codes are essential, and you know, no one knows what Tallahassee will be willing to do. Plus, there's a lot of infrastructure proper, like sewage and roads that will need to be rebuilt from scratch.
On the Stolberg text line, a listener is pointing out that the Red Cross takes 20% of every dollar given for administration.
That may be true, but it is still a worthy cause, and donating to Red Cross for hurricane relief is essential. That could be gospel, but it is still essential that we support Red Cross and the efforts that they undertake.
I would say that at minimum, Red Cross has experience. They've done disaster after disaster.
Yeah, they have. They have.
Hmm. All right, Dr. James Bray is checking in with us from Florida. I just wanted to talk with someone in the Sunshine State and make sure the sunshine is still there. He's been describing the events of the last week or two. We are going to off to California Headline News and ABC Radio News. Craig updates us with time saver traffic and weather together. We will continue to hear more from Jim Bray. And then we will wrap up the show for this Wednesday. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio for the Central Coast. It is the Dave Congleton Show. Happy Wednesday. KVC News Talk time is now 6:35. I'm Dave Congleton. I thought we would end the show today just by going out to the Sunshine State. We have been watching and reading about Hurricane Ian and its impact on Florida. Dr. James Bray, who has been living in Florida since 1986, has gone through a hurricane or two himself, has been describing the damage to the state and what is expected here. Jim, as we're back with you, I've never been through a hurricane. The worst weather I had, 1983, I was living in Salt Lake City, and there was intense flooding in the downtown. And then I've been in some severe lightning storms in Oklahoma, but that's about it. What's been your personal experience like with hurricanes?
I've been through two hurricanes that passed right overhead. Irma, which was in Miami 5 years ago. There's a level of anxiety before the hurricane hits as it's approaching. Trying to figure out if you are going to be safe and if your friends and family are going to be safe, crossing your fingers that you have enough water and food for however many days. And then after Irma, everything was closed. Everything was closed. Gas stations, grocery stores, the roads were closed. There were trees everywhere. There were a half dozen trees on each street. I remember walking around in the neighborhood, waiting till the street that the civil servants could come through with chainsaws and clear a path. It's just paralyzing, is what it is. And folks run out of water. Power is out. Cell phone service is out, so you can't really find out quickly who's doing well and who needs assistance. It's frightening beyond description. And then 2004 in Orlando, Charlie passed overhead. That was my first hurricane, and the eye passed right over the residence where I was living and went outside at midnight, and it was dead silent for about 10 minutes, and then the hurricane passed over, and then it was the second half on the south side that we experienced. Hmm. But Charlie was the same as Irma and the same as Ian. And the first thing that you notice is no power, and the humidity and the heat of Florida is just stifling. And you can't get around because all the streets are impassable. With between flooding and the trees, it's I guess paralyzing is the best word.
All right, let's take a call. We got a call. We got Bob on KVEC. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Bob.
And hi, Doctor.
Hi.
I'm just wondering if the political reality has hit the constituents in the state of Florida. I read that every single Republican member of Congress from the state of Florida voted against federal aid going to their own state.
Are you aware of that, Jim?
Yeah, that's true. And it's baffling to understand. And while the House delegates and the senators voted against the initial relief package because it contained too much non-essential funding, they voted against it. Yeah, they did. And will it change the electorate? I don't think so. I don't. The Republicans, wow. And to be honest, the Democrats are very loyal to their party, and things like that they just ignore when they go into the ballot box. I can't explain it. I don't understand it.
Bob,
that's just amazing. I'm so sorry for the people of Florida that you know that they have to put up with this when the federal government, President Biden, was there today. They're ready to put up. They're ready to take care of the people. I just wish their elected leaders would do the same. Thank you.
All right, Bob. Thank you.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. So at some point, Florida will come around. We have to. We have to come around politically.
Why? Why are they voting? Why are the Republicans in Congress voting against funds, disaster funds?
Well, the initial piece of legislation was for disaster funds, but it was also a lot of pork, and it was. And what Rubio and Rick Scott said they were voting against was the pork. And but what's highlighted is the obvious, which is they delayed funding for a full week because the subsequent package did get passed and signed and sent down. But you know, that week is horrible if you know, you want to rebuild.
I'm going to... go ahead.
The political philosophy behind it is, like I said, it makes no sense, none whatsoever, that we continue to vote for representatives who don't serve the interests of the people of Florida.
I'm struck by this. I go back to the story about the First Lady of Florida, and I'm not attacking her. I thank her for stepping up. But I'm confused, Jim, because I'm reading from the official State of Florida website. They are announcing that the first $1 million has been raised and distributed through the Florida Disaster Fund, which is what Mrs. DeSantis is running. But they say that the following organizations have received the funding grants. So they're raising the money, and they are in turn giving it to Salvation Army, American Red Cross, Feeding Florida, Operation Barbecue Relief, United Way. It kind of goes back to your point. Why not just give to you? Why not go just give directly to Red Cross? Why go through another layer of bureaucracy?
It is another level of bureaucracy. And if it works efficiently and if there's not administrative overhead, then fine. But, you know, maybe the problem is not the governor's wife running it. Maybe it's me just not trusting another level of bureaucracy. Especially, like you said earlier, the Red Cross has a long history of disaster relief assistance, and they know what they are doing.
I interviewed a guy he's retired now, but he was in the Red Cross, and he said the Red Cross was on the ground before the hurricane even struck.
Oh, yeah. They do pre-staging, and they move emergency vehicles and rescue vehicles well ahead of time. They get them as close to the eye of the storm as they can get safely.
James Bray, nice enough just to chat with us about Florida. If you have a question, feel free to join in, 805-543-8830. Or 800-549-5832. You dodged the bullet on Ian, but as you were explaining before Bob called in, you've gone through a couple hurricanes. So are you still sticking with Florida, or are you now, is this enough to make you look elsewhere?
Oh, I, to be very honest, I'm always looking elsewhere. All I need is a job. Miami's too crowded for me. I grew up in a small state of North Dakota, as you know, and I've just decided Miami's way, way too crowded. Too much concrete, no parks, and just driving me nuts. I'm getting old. That's what it is. We kidding?
Yeah, but you've been there since 1986. You've put up with it all this time.
Yeah, very true. Very true. And I'll tell you something. December, January, February, when it's 80 degrees in Florida, it's a real nice state to live in.
Well, people...
But the heat of the summer and the humidity and the hurricanes, they really try a person's patience over time.
Yeah, I would think being on constant hurricane watch would get old after a while because you're packing up or you're unpacking or you're going to ride it out. Yep. Is this going to be the one? There's some kind of anxiety taking place.
I'll tell you something else that I just remembered that occurred to me. This hurricane was very different. I've gone through minor hurricanes that weren't really close to it. This hurricane was different, and it's because I have a dog. Okay, and in the previous hurricanes and before, I didn't have a dog, and I really was worried to death about him, and I hate to say it, that there are some pets that I don't want to say they were abandoned, but they were left behind.
Sure.
There always an issue with Florida hurricanes. It's horrible. It's shameful.
You've got it two ways. You've got animals who are left behind, and then you get people who stay behind because they don't want to abandon their animals.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm probably in that second group. And you know, if I don't have assurances that I can take Teddy with me, I'm not going anywhere.
Rebuilding. There's talk of the insurance company stepping in saying, we're not going to insure these houses that are built on these coastal zones anymore.
Oh, yeah. And it'd be very easy for Tallahassee legislature to say, if you want to do service in Florida, you have to insure coastal properties. But there's never been any movement in that direction. There are something like 27, I heard, 3 or 4 days, 27 fewer insurance companies in the state of Florida than there were 5 years ago. They just left. What's going to happen now is what always happens is they will pay the absolute minimum for someone's home, and then 90 days later, they will not reinsure the property. So you will have partial coverage of your destroyed home, but no insurance. And heaven forbid you try to buy a new house, insurance is through the roof.
Well, here we are in California, and we've got wildfires and earthquakes. Hurricanes.
Yeah. I don't even want to say what's worse. I've never been through a fire or an earthquake, but I can imagine the anxiety and the fear is just immeasurable.
Well, and then you lose your house in a fire, and what do? You rebuild because you want to live where you want to live.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just the nature of people, you know. You get a nice neighborhood, a nice community, and schools and work. It just is hard to uproot. Yeah. It really is.
I don't want to talk about your governor at all. He's got his hands full, and we want to support him and do everything that can be done for the people of Florida. But I am curious about your Senate race. Is Rubio in trouble?
Oh, yes, he is. I knew Val Demings when I lived in Orlando. I met her a couple of times, and she is cutting his lead. And now it's statistical dead heat at this point, with a month away. I think he had her at the beginning by 8 points, and she has shaved a percentage point off a month. I think Rubio is desperate. What? And Val Demings is brilliant.
Well, Marco Rubio ran for president in 2016. They were thinking he was the next big thing. What has happened to Rubio in the last 6-7 years?
Well, a big part of it is that he doesn't show up. I mean, the first vote on hurricane relief that he voted against, he was there to cast the vote. The second vote, in which the relief package for Florida passed, he was not in attendance. The man just doesn't show up for key senatorial votes. And Floridians don't like that, Republican or Democrat. They don't like that at all. And that's really cutting against him, along with his, you know, borderline alt-right agenda between immigration and women and reproductive rights. I don't really think Florida's had it. It's going to be close. David, it's going to be real close, but she's in a much stronger position than she was several weeks ago.
Hmm. All I know about her is that she was on the short list for Biden's running mate.
Yep. Yeah, she was the sheriff of the Orange County Sheriff's Department, and then ran for the House seat and won that. And I'll tell you something. The Democrats love her. The moderates like her. And the Republicans, to be very honest, are willing to put up with her.
Do we know why Rubio missed
the vote?
Why did Rubio miss the vote?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Why did Rubio miss the vote?
Oh, I have no idea.
You didn't give a reason?
I don't know. No. Nope. His voting record is like 76% attendance. He misses 1 in 4 votes.
Hmm. Well, that would be interesting to see. All right, Dr. Bray, yeah. Thanks as always for your perspective.
Good talking to you.
Final thoughts about what's happening in Florida, sir?
They're not viewers, they're listeners. If your listeners have an inclination, call the Red Cross and make a donation. Doesn't have to be a big one, but it will certainly be appreciated and helpful.
Because the next time it could be California.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very true. Very true. There's no safe state.
Yeah, there isn't.
It just isn't.
All right, Professor. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back. Wrap things up. We're live, we're local. This is Hometown Radio. We've got the show tomorrow mostly put together. We have, I believe she's a first-time guest, at least in the capacity that she's coming on tomorrow, Dr. Cindy Griffin, a well-known therapist in San Luis Obispo in the county, is going to be joining us, and we're going to talk about how do you decide the worth of one's life? How do you decide? Is it the money you make? Is it the family you have? Is it your job? How do you decide? We want to talk about that. Also, I have Jason from Motor Mouse. We'll find out what's happening with cars and pick his brain. We also are going to spend the 5 o'clock hour with attorney Jim Murphy. I want Jim to talk about Paul and Ruben Flores and Kristen Smart. He has been involved in this case almost since the beginning. By the way, the Tribune is reporting the fate of Paul and Ruben Flores now rests in the hands of their separate juries following the final round of closing arguments in the Kristen Smart murder trial on Wednesday. After Paul Flores' jury began deliberating in the Kristen Smart murder trial on Tuesday, closing arguments concluded in his father's case on Wednesday. Paul Flores is on trial, and we know all that. One thing you'll have to find is in order for someone to be an accessory to a crime, there needs to be a crime, the prosecutor told the jury, before highlighting evidence that he believes shows Paul Flores' guilt. The defense attorney says there's no evidence tying his client or Paul Flores to Smart's murder, and asked the jurors to look at the evidence critically. The Ruben Flores jury is expected to begin deliberations after some instructions at around 1:30 p.m. That is in today. They talked a little bit about the closing arguments, and they have reviewed all that. So the Tribune has a very extensive article here. So, both cases have gone to the jury. I am not a legal expert, which is one of the reasons we wanted Jim Murphy to come in tomorrow, since he has been following the trial and he has been following this case. By the time we hear from Jim Murphy tomorrow at 5 o'clock, we could have a verdict in either one or both cases. I would be stunned if that were the case. Having been on a jury, I think these both juries, because there's one for the father and one for the son, I think they're going to take their time and be very deliberate. I suspect there's been a lot of note-taking, and there's going to be careful deliberation, because once the verdicts come back, guilty or not guilty, we're going to want to have faith that the verdicts were fair and just and reasonable. So if they just come out right away and say, not guilty, then, you know, that's what's going to happen. But obviously, because I'm getting all sorts of emails today about Chris Lambert, and when are we going to have Chris Lambert on, and how can people support Chris Lambert? Frankly, if I may, the best thing you can do for Chris right now is just leave him alone. and let him do his work. He has been pursuing this case for the last few years, and without a doubt, he is the guy that has made a difference. For example, if Paul Flores is found guilty, there's no doubt in my mind that Chris Lambert is largely responsible for that happening because of his investigative reporting and the work that he has done. But people want to, they want him on the show, and they want to talk to him. No, just let him be, let him finish the journey. And by all means, please let the Smart family finish the journey. We will be monitoring all the media, and I guarantee you that if there is any update between 3 and 7 o'clock, we will let you know. And if anything happens outside of that parameter that we find out, we'll put it on our social media. Are you following us on Facebook? Are you signed up for the KVC Daily Update? Anyway. So, yes, please tune in tomorrow at 5 o'clock in particular if you want the very latest on Paul Flores or Ruben Flores from a guy who's been following this case, Jim Murphy. Gary Girolamo, candidate for Lucia Mar School Board, Friday at 5. State Senator John Laird, Monday at 5. All right? I'm just giving you three reasons to keep listening to the show. Meanwhile, we are out of here. Thanks to all of our guests today. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks, as always, to Craig Hill for his help. And thanks to you for listening. We will see you tomorrow at 3:05. I'm Dave Congleton. Now, Oliver, get out of my chair. I'm coming home. Good night.
The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slow County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 0111-911.